The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network at Cold Omaha MN. I might have mentioned it already, but this is episode number 6. I am joined by producer Andy Carlson. I am calling you half producer, half conductor. You've been kind of the lead guy getting these going, so I'm going to create a title for you. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's fair.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's going in and out. I think maybe like the maestro would even sound like, I don't know, that just sounds fitting for Andy, the maestro. Producer, conductor, I like the maestro.
Exactly. Well, that would work too. The mystery third voice that you're hearing with us today is Cold Omaha's own Luke Inman. Luke, first of all, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Been a big fan of Midwest Swing for a while, and just excited that you as well as I is – really starting the Cold Omaha trend here, which is going to be a really exciting journey for all of us here for quite a while. So I'm excited to get going, man.
Yep. Website launches, I believe, in the next week or so. I remedied what was an egregious oversight in the last week, and I believe that our listeners should as well. How can they find you on Twitter?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Luke_Spinman. And I've also got plenty of good solid draft work coming out on eDraft.com as well, including a Prospect a Day video series, which I started last year, got some good feedback. So my first video launches tomorrow, breaking down Josh Doctson's tape, kind of a highly touted and big buzz name receiver around here in the Vikings parts due to the fact that they might end up drafting a receiver in the first round to go get Teddy Bridgewater some help. So
yeah. Be on the lookout for that. TCU, right?
TCU, yes, sir. Yep.
Yep. And so, Spinman, is that just kind of having a little fun with your name, or is there an actual backstory?
I mean, both. You know, it's just one of those goofy high school nicknames that we're like, hey, we're white kids from the suburbs. Let's try to give each other really ghetto, cool gangster names. And I got stuck with Spinners because spinning rims were really hot at the time, if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
Maybe, Brandon, you're still rocking the spinning rims. I don't know. I see you at the stoplight and you keep them spinning. But I got Spinners. And because my last name was Inman, Spinman just ended up flowing really good. So everybody called me Spinman for a while. So that's it, man. I mean, nothing too crazy.
Well, we were the same growing up, but at least you were near the suburbs. You were near the city. I grew up about 400 miles north of here. Oh, yeah. We just really had no clue what we were even talking about. So we had all kinds of dumb nicknames, but they didn't get out of hand or anything, which was fortunate.
Well, I do want to clarify that we didn't know what we were talking about either. So,
yeah. So I understand you got to the Senior Bowl this year. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Okay,
yeah,
so we'll get into that as we move forward. I don't want to bury the lead, though. Well, Midwest Swing, usually we're talking about baseball. Today we're going to break down the local football team. It's a little fun cross promotion, and I just thought it would be good to kind of build a little bit of good vibes between some of the other Cold Omaha guys and just kind of promote what each other are doing. Obviously, the Vikings are a big kind of happening in the city right now with how good this season was and how we've seen what can succeed in the playoffs and how this team is built. And we're going to get into all that, but I don't want to bury the lead, or I don't want to get too far away from the weekend that we're coming off of. And then that's the Super Bowl weekend. Obviously, you know, I think the Super Bowl did like a 91% share with men our age. So, you know, if you find 10 guys on the street, the odds are 9 of them saw at least part of the Super Bowl. You got to have your thoughts on that game. I only saw the second half. I had taken my wife out to a birthday dinner at Pittsburgh Blue, saw the second half, and I think I struck a good balance there.
Yeah, no doubt. That was a good balance. I think, you know, I went into the game expecting the Panthers to kind of blow them away, to be honest, and which is, you know, you'd think that's uncharacteristic for a Super Bowl, but actually some Super Bowls end up being pretty lopsided. 2 years ago, we saw the Seahawks blow out the Broncos in the same situation. So I thought the Panthers, the way they were just cruising through everybody, you know, they're up 31-0 on the Seahawks. They blew out the Cardinals 2 weeks before that. I just thought that they were just kind of on fire. They had all all the momentum on their side, and they were really tough to beat, especially if they got up 7-10 nothing. It's such a hard team to beat and come back on. But flip the script, they never got up 10-0. They got down 10-0, and that was really foreign to them. And you could see kind of Cam Newton start to buckle a little bit, start to buckle under the pressure a little bit, hide up in his shell. And at that point, they just could not get anything rolling, and it was just kind of a one-dimension football team at that point. And it wasn't the best Super Bowl in the world, to be honest. I mean, from just a game standpoint, it was kind of sloppy. There wasn't a lot of big plays to be had or made. It was a defensive battle. It was an offensive struggle, and it came down to, really, like any game, a couple big plays. So kudos to the Broncos. Peyton can go right out in the sunset now. Hopefully he retires like John Elway did after winning a Super Bowl, and he hangs it up, because what a hell of a career he had, and there's no better way to go out than hosting the Lombardi Trophy, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope that's the case too. And part of my, you know, I think we all came out of the game with Cam hot takes. Part of my take on that, and I don't think it's all that hot, but at the same time, it's such a polarizing thing that anybody who's on the opposite side is going to think that you're being that way, is he didn't handle losing well. But keep in mind, this is a team that lost one time during the regular season, one time during, well, again, you know, the regular season. This is a team that did not lose a lot. And then, again, I don't know that it is necessarily a team built to play from behind with the basically the wide receivers that he had. You know, Devin Funchess never really became the guy I think they were hoping he would be over the course of the season. Ted Ginn, you know, he had his moments all season long. But, you know, in crunch time, sometimes you show your true colors. I think he had one play that went off his hands and was picked off, which is pretty much the most Ted Ginn thing ever. And Greg Olsen, I think I saw Andy tweet, put out an all points bulletin on wherever Greg Olsen is. And, you know, if you take away Greg Olsen, I think that's probably going to sink Cam more often than not, regardless of who you're playing against. Would you agree?
No, I absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, the big thing with really what you just said, recapping that, is, you know, how much the Panthers and Cam Newton did with so little throughout the whole year. I mean, when Kelvin Benjamin went down before the season even started, everybody wrote this team off right from the get-go before they even played a game. And I just think that, you know, they did so much with so little. You look at their offensive tackles. Andy and I just got done recapping Mike Remmers on one side and Michael Orr, two cast-offs, really played phenomenal, really, for the whole season up until the Super Bowl, when they kind of got exposed by really the best edge rushers and defense in the league. But the receiving core is certainly lacking some luster and star power there. But they were able to make do, and they were able to make plays throughout the entire year. You know, when somebody needed to go make a big play, they did. Yeah, whether it was Ted Ginn and Greg Olsen or Cam Newton, you name it, they did it. And then the defense was just so opportunistic. Again, they're just a team that was built on thriving and just swallowing you up when they got up 10-0. And they were never able to get up that 10-0, and vice versa. They really buckled. And you could tell they were put in a foreign spot. You mentioned they had only lost once. Well, they were never really down much either throughout the season, more than a handful of times. And I just think that they were just, you know, going into the game, I mean, they were just so used to cruising through everybody. It was really a tough spot, a foreign spot for them, and you could tell they looked really uncomfortable. And you need your quarterback to step up in that situation, and Cam did the opposite, man. He buckled. He kind of shelled up a little bit and went into a little shell, and that's not what you want to see. But again, I mean, looking back and reflecting, boy, they did a hell of a lot with not a lot of talent or star power. So it's bittersweet ending, that's for sure. But it was really a hell of a season when you sit back and reflect.
Yeah, it was amazing. When you talk about that opportunistic defense and those kind of plays, probably not sustainable. It's not the kind of thing you can do week after week, because you need a willing offense that's going to make those mistakes. So with that in mind, if you play the Super Bowl 10 times, who do you think wins it more, and how many times do they win out of those 10?
Well, you know, this was kind of a convo that I was having earlier, was that, you know, had the Broncos only had 1 week to prepare instead of this big 2 week gap, I wonder if the outcome would have been the same, because not only do you only get the 1 week to prepare against Cam's offense and things like that, but the momentum factor is so huge, I think, going from a week to 2 weeks, because you know, it kind of kills your momentum a little bit. If you're a hot team, it's kind of a little buzzkill. It's kind of a little halt. You kind of got to regroup again and re-energize again, and it stops some of that just fire momentum. I remember when both of the championship games ended, everybody thought, well, the Panthers, the way they just smoked the Cardinals, and then the way that the Broncos needed really every single ounce and inch, and it came down to a two-point conversion to beat a banged-up Patriots team. I know I thought that the Panthers were certainly the favorite had they played, you know, just 3, 4, 5 days later. But that 2 weeks was just so long and gave the Broncos so much extra time to prepare. You know, I think that that really was a huge advantage for them now looking back and seeing that. Now, saying that, I think that if they're going to play that 10 times, I still think the Panthers win that 7 or 8 times because I just think, again, if they can get up a touchdown, if they could score first, you look at, you know, you missed it. Sounds like you were out at a birthday dinner, but there is a huge 20-yard pass play that looked like a catch. It was really close call, and they called it a no catch. Had they gotten that catch, who knows? Maybe they go down and end up scoring, and the momentum, the whole thing of just being up, just changes things. I don't know, but I just think that the fact that they got up 10-0, the Broncos did, it was pretty much over before it started because the Panthers are just so not used to that situation, and you could really tell.
Yeah, I was going to guess 6 or 7 times the Panthers pull that off, but it, you know, that's why you play it once. That's why you play the game. The one thing I did want to ask about more of a local angle, local scene here is when you frame how the Broncos or the Panthers played the Broncos, do you have any more clarity, any more vision, or any more appreciation for how the Vikings and maybe even specifically Teddy Bridgewater attacked that team and that defense in their regular season matchup?
Well, you know, you can look at the regular season matchup and you can say, you know, really, I mean, it came down to really just a missed field goal by Blair Walsh in the end, which is easy to say, you know, once it's over. But I think the bigger thing here is that you look at the Super Bowl, not only contenders, but the winners the past 3, 4, 5 years. They've all had really good defenses. And this year, the winner had the number one defense in the league. But, you know, the Seahawks 2 years ago. I had one of the best defenses in the league when they smoked the Broncos. Last year, the Patriots won on a turnover right at the end, but both those defenses were great. So you can see that you need it. Not much has changed, really, even though it's a passing league. You still need a dominant defense to get there, to get deep into the playoffs, into the Super Bowl. You still need some sort of running game for the most part. And then you got to be able to go get the passer. You got to be able to rush the passer and blitz the passer and make him uncomfortable. So I think what you're seeing here with Mike Zimmer and what he's done in just 2 years, what he did after the first year was remarkable, taking a dead last defense and ranking it in the middle of the pack, 16th, 17th defense in the league, and now bringing them into really that top 7, top 8 defense, maybe even top 5 in some categories after just 2 years without really bringing in a ton of his own players or developing those guys yet. It is nothing but high hopes if you're a Viking faithful here and you think about all the fun stuff they got coming up here. You got a new stadium being opened up next year. It's going to cause a lot of excitement. And then they're hosting the Super Bowl 2 years after that in 2018. So I think the core and foundation is being set, is being built with a phenomenal defense that is going to keep you in every game. I think I called that out even at training camp. I go, you know, this offense is going to continue to go through some growing pains with Bridgewater. But you can tell the defense, especially the defensive line, is going to keep them in every game. They're never going to get blown out, really, in any game. And I think that was the case maybe besides 1 or 2 games, Seahawks and I forget the other one, but for the most part, that defense kept him in every game. Now the bigger question becomes now, what do you do with Teddy Bridgewater? Year 3 is the big year, the final push. And I think to fairly assess him, Brandon, you're going to have to get him some weapons to say that, you know, okay, well, we got him help. We got him talent. We drafted this kid. We drafted that kid. And he still didn't go over the hump. So maybe he's not the answer. You don't want that Christian Ponder thing going on, that conversation after year 3 and 4 going, well, you know, he had AP, but he didn't really have any receivers in the offensive line. You want to be able to fairly assess the kid and be able to look at yourself in the mirror after the season's done and be able to say that, you know, we gave him talent. He just couldn't do anything with it. So we'll see. Year 3 is big for the quarterback. It's going to be big for Teddy Bridgewater, and that's why I expect them to start surrounding him with a little bit more talent in the passing game and the offensive line.
And now we'll get to that too more as we jump into further segments where we break down the season and the offseason to come. back to the Super Bowl, when you look at these two teams and you look at some of these free agent lists, everybody if it's not mock drafts, everybody's looking at free agent predictions or even just who are the big free agents and how is that going to alter the landscape with how they sign and who they sign with. Both teams that were in the Super Bowl have big key free agents on their specifically defenses. Each one has a top five defensive free agent that may depart. When you look at who these teams could possibly lose, who do you view as the team more likely to return to the Super Bowl in one calendar season?
Man, that's a great question. First of all, it's tough to get back there the next year. It really is. I mean, the Seahawks.
Very much so.
It's so tough because you got the bullseye on your back. First of all, you played later in the season. People don't think about it. You just played another month of football while everybody else was resting and recouping and hitting the reset button. You're going deep in the play. You're still playing football for another month, which is huge on the NFL calendar scheme. And I just think you got the bullseye on your back. Everybody's gunning for you. Every time you play somebody, they want to beat you because you're with that kind of signifies something for them. You know, you're 2-12, but hey, if we knock this team off, play spoiler, all of a sudden that gives them some high hopes. So it's really tough to get back there. Seahawks did it back-to-back years 2 years ago. And I just think that, you know, when you look at these two teams, you mentioned some big name free agents. I think the Broncos have a lot more quantity with quality, with guys like Von Miller, Brock Osweiler, is Peyton coming back, Malik Jackson, Danny Trevathan. The Panthers, although they have quite a few, it's just really for me the guy that sticks out is Josh Norman. And Josh Norman, certainly I would think they're going to do everything they can to retain him. I don't think they're really in too bad of cap casualty or anything like that. So I think that they really are, because of the Broncos defense and just watching what the Panthers did this year. I think they both could return next year, but I think it's going to be a lot harder to retain all those guys for the Broncos than it is the Panthers. So even though defense is what can get you there and win it, I think that first they got to prove that they can really retain at least the majority of those guys one way or another. Otherwise, it's going to be a lot harder to get back there without that number one defense.
What does Kelvin Benjamin returning next year do for those Panthers, though?
Oh, man, it does a lot. And again, the fact that they did this without him, he fell in the first round 2 years ago because he ran a slow 40 time. He, for lack of a better word, he got a little pudgy. He was big. He showed up at like 230, 235 to a couple combines and events and things like that. And people saw some Mike Williams, former USC receiver drafted for the Detroit Lions, who just got too big, and they got a little scared off. He fell to pick 27 of the Panthers, and he proved everybody wrong. He's just a big-bodied, go-up-and-get-it-at-its-highest-point guy that can really bail out a quarterback, and a guy who, it doesn't matter if you got one guy, two guys, or three guys, as he's proven, he's still got a chance to go make that catch. So that's an X factor right there. That's a mismatch guy. And the NFL thrives on mismatch guys. Guys like Jimmy Graham or Rob Gronkowski, you can spread out and get one-on-one, and you're gonna convert 4 out of 5 times when you got a good throw and a good situation there. So Kelvin Benjamin is going to add a lot, barring he's healthy, which certainly how early that injury happened, he should be. But I think that's going to add a lot to the Panthers offense. Andy and I just got done with a quick little Panthers-Broncos offseason take, and I actually had Braxton Miller, the Ohio State receiver, who's gotten a lot of buzz, drafted by the Panthers, who I just think would complement Kelvin Benjamin a lot. And the fact that he's more of the explosive guy with the ball in his hands, Benjamin's the guy in the red zone and down the field. And I think that would help that offense a lot, because as you saw in the Super Bowl, once they were matched up on some bigger, better, more talented cornerbacks, the receivers that they had now this year, although they were very great at making plays and opportunistic when you needed them during the season, they could not get any separation. They could not really make any good plays, big plays when they needed them, because to be quite honest, they were just outmatched and out-talented. So I think adding Kelvin Benjamin is going to be a huge step for that offense. But again, it's tough to get back there. I mean, all the eggs need to fall in the right basket. Everything needs to line up perfectly. So we'll see if they can do it again, because mentally, more than anything, it's just exhausting to have to go through the whole thing again and try to get all the way back there and climb that tall mountain that is really reaching the Super Bowl. So we'll see.
Appeal to my fantasy football sensibilities. Can Cameron Artis Payne be a full 3-down back for Carolina in the near future?
I saw him at the Senior Bowl 2 years ago. I love the kid coming from Auburn. I thought he had a good skill set. I think he can. Will he? I don't know, and here's why. There's just not a lot of three-down running backs anymore. There's just not a lot of guys you just give the rock to 25, 28 times a game anymore because it's just more of a passing league, and I'll tell you why. Is because the front seven, the defensive line and linebackers in, on the NFL rosters now are so quick and so talented that, you know, it's tough for a running back to get production worth giving him the ball 25, 27 times versus if I can spread everybody out and get five receivers out on the field, usually you're going to have a mismatch and say my fourth receiver is better than your fourth cornerback and I'm going to be able to pick somebody apart more times than not. So I think Cameron Artis Payne, I like the kid a lot, especially in keeper and dynasty leagues. Don't draft him too high, but I think that, you know, D'Angelo Williams out, went to Pittsburgh. You saw Jonathan Stewart production a little bit better. He missed four or five games. Cameron Artis Payne, clearly the next guy up. And that's just what you want with running backs in fantasy football. You just want opportunities. You want guys who get carries and touches. You can't score if you don't get touches. Cameron Artis Payne certainly should get at least a 40-60 split with Stewart next year, if not more. So I like the kid a lot, especially in those dynasty leagues.
Wait, are you telling me Jonathan Stewart missed games this year?
Oh, what's that? What? Hey.
Yeah. You said there's not many three-down backs. Transitioning a little bit, one who is retiring, and I got to get your take on, Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, hanging him up in, like, the third quarter of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no,
basically doing the crotch grab at the NFL during their biggest moment. I loved it because, honestly, I'm kind of an S starter to – censor myself here. I loved it. I think, honestly, the cool thing too is he saved pretty much all of his NFL salary. There's a lot to like about Marshawn Lynch, especially if you're not trying to talk to him. What's your take on him walking away?
Well, first of all, I'm with you, man. I love the guy. I don't mind the low-key personality in the media and pressers. I don't mind it, man, because sometimes that's just not everybody's game, you know. We want it to be. We want guys to interact with us through our computer screens and TV screens, but that's not everybody's game. I mean, some guys, and I'm not saying he has it, but I'm just saying, you know, public speaking is something that's, you know, feared more than a lot of things in life. So it gives people anxiety sometimes. And I know you're getting paid millions of dollars. I know you have to do it anyways. It's part of your job. But I'm just saying it's not for everybody. So I don't mind that part about Marshawn Lynch. I think he makes up for it on the field. He plays so hard on the field. It'd be different if he took some plays off here or there. But the way he plays so hard on the field, his passion for the game, his tenacity, his toughness. The game is about toughness. And he brings that to the table every play. I'm going to miss the man. He's going to be 30 in April. And for running backs, you know, that probably means you're getting close to the end. But he showed he's still got a lot left in the tank. I'll be really interested to see, and I think I'm hoping as a fan of the game that he maybe takes a year off and comes back for a little two-year stint with, like, a playoff team. I think that'd be cool. But I think I'm going to really miss his play, his running style, his tenacity. And, of course, we'll never forget that one famous run he had against the Saints, wild card playoff game about three, four, five years ago, where he took down literally the whole New Orleans Saints team in about one play and then threw that crotch grab up right at the end just to seal the deal, the trademark Marshawn Lynch move. So I'm going to miss him. I think he's a great, great talent. And I think, you know, his on-the-field play is well worth any quote-unquote off-the-field antics that some people don't like or agree with. So it's too bad, but you know what? With all the stuff that's coming out about the concussions and these guys now that they're 50, 60, 70, and they're diminishing quality of life, you can't blame them for some of these guys who have a lot of wear and tear. And I think Megatron's another example of that. Just guys that are just being a lot more conscious now of about their long-term life and future and really, again, quality of life. So,
yeah, I think he's getting out. Well, the getting's good for his body. You know, pre-30 is kind of that golden age for running backs. And if you make enough money to leave on your own terms, good for him. And if he does come back after your – I know the game would welcome him with open arms. You did mention, you kind of teased the next thing I wanted to mention, which was Calvin Johnson walking away. What was your immediate thought about that? Probably better nights of sleep for Vikings defensive backs, but at the same time, it's always troubling to see an iconic player walk away.
Yeah, it is. And I think, again, with him, Peyton Manning, and Marshawn Lynch, and there's probably going to be a few more that we don't know about yet. You know, the NFL's losing a little bit of talent here, some premier top name quality talent. But certainly guys like Cam and Odell Beckham Jr. and all these other, Kelvin Benjamin, they're going to be, you know, even out the NFL talent pool, probably even more so by the time it's all said and done. But, you know, my first thought was what a typical Detroit Lion franchise thing to happen. You know, they lose Barry Sanders in the, you know, not the middle or prime of his career, but still a guy who was ultra productive when he walked away, a la like a Robert Smith was too, a guy who's do a big contract and then walked away from the game because of health reasons. So I thought it was a classic Detroit Lion thing to happen. While the face of your franchise, a stud, probably Hall of Famer. We'll see. Maybe not now because he cut it short, but we'll see. I just think that, you know, for a Viking fan, it's great. Schematic-wise, X's and O's, that'll make things easier two times a year. But I think if you're a Detroit Lion fan, man, you're hurting now because now you just lost. You're already floating a 8-8 average trying to make the push. You just lost Ndamukong Suh, arguably the best defensive tackle in the league due to free agency, and now you're going to lose Calvin Johnson. So it hurts if you're the Detroit Lion fan or franchise because it's not just rebuild mode now. It's just like we need to just get some talent in here on both sides of the ball. So it's tough, man. If anybody's hurting or crying themselves to sleep, it's got to be the quarterback, Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, absolutely. And an interesting take was Fox 9 producer Seth Kaplan was talking about the top five playmakers in the NFC North this last season and where they are and where they're going. He had Calvin Johnson on that list. You know, you could probably have a qualm if you thought he had a down season, but you're talking Calvin Johnson, Matt Forte, Aaron Rodgers, Alshon Jeffrey, and Adrian Peterson. I don't know. Maybe I'm egregiously missing somebody. You know, Randall Cobb's in that mix when he's right. Eddie Lacy when he's right. But as far as a top five list, that gets complicated with Johnson retiring, Forte and Jeffrey hitting free agency, Rodgers having a down year, Adrian Peterson turning 30, Cobb and Lacy having down years. Do you have anybody that you think I missed? Or, I mean, is it just kind of a crazy topsy-turvy top five list?
No, you're right. I mean, that's certainly where it's at now. And I think between Jeffrey and Forte, I think they're going to end up keeping Jeffrey. You can't lose both those guys. You just can't because it's too puts you into – you're taking a big step back before you're taking a big step forward.
I think they like Langford enough to replace Forte too.
And that's exactly it. Yeah, I think, again, running back in general is just so much more expendable unless it's just a premier guy. And no disrespect to Forte, who's awesome, but it's just such a position now that's a little watered down in value and that you can go get guys.
Some places have him as the number three running back in free agency behind Lamar Miller, behind Doug Martin, too, because of his age, I would imagine.
Right.
That makes him probably less of a priority. Now, what if he sits on free agency for a while and then comes back to the Bears? Could that happen?
It's absolutely. And I think, you know, before we get into like Viking free agency stuff, a lot of goofy stuff happens with free agency. Some big name guys, they wait it out. They buy their time until like training camp, even until they wait for a big name to go down, a starter, and then they get scooped up. Great for them, you know. Then they don't have to go through the OTAs, all the offseason workouts, and all this and that, and put more wear and tear on their body. And vice versa, some of these guys get signed to a 1 or 2 or 3 year deal and then get cut during training camp. So even though, and I know we're going to eventually get to Viking free agents, you know, even though the Vikings may re-sign some of these guys or teams re-sign, doesn't mean they're going to make the final 55-man roster when it's all said and done. So a lot of flexibility, very fluid situation going on with free agency, guys getting signed, guys not getting signed. Ultimately, talent rises to the top, and I think Matt Forte, certainly still one of the better running backs. I've heard the Patriots name flown out there. I think that makes a lot of sense, although
definitely.
Every guy going to the Patriots makes sense because it's the Patriots, right? But yeah. I just think that Jeffrey will have to be re-signed. And then, you know, again, running back, especially with Langford, like you mentioned, a little bit more expendable. Now, you know, after this season, you're right. I mean, okay, Forte's gone. You got Eddie Lacy maybe. AP turns a little bit older. I think you're going to start to see some of the younger guys like a Stephon Diggs for the Vikings start to get up there. Kevin White, we didn't see see any of him for the Bears this year. Top 10 pick, 7th overall. He could be interesting. Jeff Janis started to make a lot of noise at the end of the season. I saw him at the Senior Bowl 2 years ago. Saginaw Valley State is a guy who big body who can make some plays downfield. So now it's starting to, again, you know, Marshawn Lynch, Calvin, Peyton. Now the younger guys, it's new school now versus old school. New school's starting to creep up here a little bit. And I think some of those younger names are going to maybe not necessarily get in that top five for the NFC North, but certainly going to start to make a little push.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we did promise to deliver on it, and maybe we're taking a little longer than we want to. But for a Vikings season recap, I don't think I went into the season thinking they'd win 11 ball games. Did you think they would be close to that? What was your initial feeling for this squad?
You know, I initially had them at 10 after going through the schedule.
I think I did too, at
10. And then you start to lose a little confidence just the more you talk about it with surface fans and just, you know, the inability of the offensive line and the quarterback and all this.
Also, losing to San Francisco to start the season doesn't really make you feel very confident.
Well, not just losing, but getting slaughtered, really. I mean, blown out was something that probably in hindsight actually was the best thing to happen to that team because it happened so early in the season. It happened right out the gate that it really shook everybody up, really woke everybody up and snapped them back to reality.
Did Gerald Hodges do something that they just left him in San Francisco, or was that just a good move at the time?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Well, you know, I don't know what happened with that. I think that Zimmer's really got the kind of mindset and attitudes that he wants from guys. And I think, you know, just spending the few days that I do down in training camp around some of these guys, and there's nothing that Hodges specifically did that I could think of or stuck out for me, but it was just kind of that persona that, like, it's not always team first. It's kind of loosey-goosey attitude. It's not always work hard, play hard, you know, work first, play second type of thing. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the Patterson attitude once in a while, unfortunately. But I just think that, you know, they had good depth at linebacker, and then they traded him, and unfortunately then Adi Cole ends up going down right away. And that made that position thin. But it also got guys like Barr and Eric Kendricks a lot of good, valuable playing time at some different roles and positions, which I think is just so invaluable, something that you can't put a price on. And that's why, you know, before, and I know we're going to get to like offensive line, things like that, but like a guy like TJ Clemmings, who maybe didn't light the world on fire, maybe even struggled more than he succeeded. But the fact that a rookie got all those snaps and experience and playing time is so huge that, you know, that is really tough to say, okay, now we're going to have you go sit on the bench now for a year and figure out, you know, why we bring in more talent. I just don't know or see why they would bring in a first-round guy that's expected to start right away and then put TJ Clemmings on the bench. I mean, unless he just shows nothing in the off-season workouts or training camp, you know, that's different. But I just think that there's certainly he has a talented skill set to be able to start in the league somewhere on the offensive line. And that experience that he got this year is going to come in handy next year. I know that.
For me, the funny thing after that game, you live in a neighborhood, just moved to it, where we all congregate in a neighbor's garage to watch the games on Monday nights, have a couple beers, and as they're just getting crushed, I said, you know what's going to happen is this is going to be a 5-win 49ers team. The Vikings are going to win 9 games, miss the playoffs by 1 game, and everyone's going to look back at this 49ers game and just say, well, what in the hell happened? Now, fortunately, the only half of that prediction that was correct was the 49ers half. They did win exactly 5 games. I actually checked. But that the Vikings went 11-4 after that, you know, you get your arbitrary endpoints, and they're kind of dumb. But that's kind of amazing. Like, and you watch the game on Twitter. I've started to not do that anymore because it drives me crazy. But how many games were there the fourth quarter, and you had the tried-and-true Viking fan, they're going to blow it. I mean, was it 8 games, 10 games where the fans, yep, they're going to blow it, and they came out on top, and, like, nobody learned their lesson. But I was very impressed with how they stemmed the tide in games where there was adversity down the stretch, and the defense – like you said in the Super Bowl, where you need that defense, the defense rose to the occasion and lifted up maybe a sagging offensive effort or a game where Teddy maybe threw for 180, 150 yards and not more than, you know, not more touchdowns and interceptions. I was really impressed with how they weathered storms down the stretch.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I think that, you know, Vikings fans are right to you know, just default back to that. They're going to blow it because they've been burned so many times, and I think this speaks volumes to not only, you know, what a new era and foundation that Mike Zimmer has built that is encouraging, that they're not just going to be good next year, but they're going to be good for a long time because of that defense. But I just think that you know, they really overachieved to a lot of people's expectations this year. And I think Vegas had the over-under at like 7.5. And, you know, right out the gate, it was like even money. And then everybody powered the over, and then people kind of got scared off a little bit. But I just think that they definitely overachieved this year. And knowing what they did in just year two under Zimmer with really a very average offense, 31st in passing offense, I think, yardage-wise. A lot of stuff to improve on, but yet still a lot of stuff to be proud of and really build off of momentum-wise.
Did they peak a year earlier than you expected?
I think so. Yeah, I think when you look at the quarterback and the coach, it takes 3 years in general. That's the quota. It takes, you know, 2 years to get your guys in, and then the third year you finally produce them. Quarterback, same thing. Just takes 3 years to figure out the speed and nuances of the league. But yet there we were in year two, and all of a sudden it's like, boom, we were winning the close games. You know, we're not getting blown out anymore. We're winning those close ones that come down to a possession or two. We're playing good defense and special teams and doing the things that you need to do to win. We're doing those things, and that was probably the biggest surprise for me, that just how quick Mike Zimmer got the team into a winning mentality and foundation after just really a year and a half of football. And he did that so quick and so smooth with really not a lot of his own guys in there yet. I mean, give credit to Rick Spielman, while Leslie Frazier was in there, brought in a good core of young nucleus and talent. But wait until Mike Zimmer gets his guys in there for his defense and his team. Guys like Danelle Hunter, you know, guys like Eric Kendrick, guys like that, that's going to make in 2-3 years, even from now, you're going to see, at least on the defensive side of the ball, a defensive dynasty in that aspect to where they're going to be good for a long time.
Is Teddy a Zimmer guy? Is he a Spielman guy? Is he a both guy? Or was he just a product of a really nice player slipping in the draft and falling into their laps and they've made it work?
Well, I think he was a Norv Turner guy, to be honest. I know, okay. Norv
that's
Turner.
That's the other guy you gotta account for in that.
Yeah, I mean, really, and that was the biggest thing that I loved about the marriage between Zimmer and Norv, was that Zimmer, and he would admit it to you, I even asked him in some press conference down at the training camp, like, what is your role in the offense? Like, what do you do during the week to game plan the offense? Or do you just kind of stroll in and say, Norv, what are we doing this week? Because Norv's pedigree speaks for itself, Super Bowl rings of his own, and you know, 30-plus years in the league as an offensive wizard for a few years there. I mean, it was the perfect marriage, complement, and balance between, yes, I'm the head coach in Mike Zimmer, but I'm really a defensive coach. I have another head coach who's may not have that title, but he's the offensive coach. So I thought it was a perfect balance. I thought Norv Turner was the guy who gave Teddy the green light, and Rick Spielman the green light, excuse me, to draft Teddy after a horrible pro day, which likely was why he slipped and fell. You know, as late as he did, pick whatever, 32, where they traded back up. So I just think that Norv Turner was probably the biggest turning point, is why they drafted a guy like Teddy over maybe a guy like Derek Carr, which right now, you know, some people will argue Derek Carr is looking like the better prospect and will have the better NFL career. But again, you got to be able to fairly assess these guys after 3 years, and you can't do that without the right talent and help. Derek Carr had Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree and a pretty above-average offensive line. I know Teddy's got AP, and you know, some guys are no joke, like Mike Wallace is a name brand, and Stephon Diggs showed up. But Amari Cooper, man, he's going to be good for 10, 12 years. He's a blue-chip guy. So I just think this year is all about making sure you get Teddy some legitimate talent and help, whether it's free agency or the draft, you name it. But you got to be able to finish this year and be able to fairly assess him honestly and say, you know what, we tried. We got him the talent, but he still couldn't produce.
So if you look at the Twins, to kind of bring this full circle to baseball,
yeah,
they overachieved and had a nice year, especially coming off four straight 90-loss seasons. Can you envision a scenario with the Vikings where they are a better team next year, they're an improved team next year, but they win fewer games due to overachieving in 2015?
I think baseball, you get that a little bit more because there's so many games. Right. You can spread it out a little bit. It gets a little bit more thinned out in that aspect. So I could see them not winning 11 games this year. That's for sure. I mean, 11 games is tough. And I think now that they won the division, they're going to have a little bit tougher schedule next year for the most part. Now, every week is a tough game. Everybody you play is always going to be tough. But the schedule might be a little bit tougher next year. We'll see. So it's tough to win 11 games. But I think, again, the biggest thing about the Vikings is that the defense is going to keep them in every – they're going to have a chance to win going into the fourth quarter, whether they're up or down. It's going to be a damn close game no matter what in almost every game. You know, 13 of the 16 games, I'll call it out right now, they're going to have a legitimate chance to win. Not just like, hey, we need this and this and this and this to happen. It's if we can hold on to the ball and we can make one more play, we should be able to win this. I mean, the defense is just going to keep them in every game. And like we saw the Broncos this year win the Super Bowl. I mean, the defense really is still the heart and soul and what you need in football to be able to go be a consistently good team.
When you look at this division, how do you assess the Packers' needle right now?
Did you say need?
Needle. Like, is it pointing up? Is it pointing down? Is it pointing
to the
side? Is it, you know, with how Rodgers played down the stretch, and again, I never feel like I trust Rodgers struggling because all I ever see is the Vikings facing him and him just being surgical. And so for me, it's always tough to envision him struggling. And yet I watch him, you know, on the second game, on the second half of the Fox doubleheader, and he plays poorly against the Lions. And I'm just like, well, what the heck's going on here? Do you think their needle is pointing in a direction that is going to be good for the Vikings moving forward, or are they going to be another tough team to battle with?
Well, I want to agree with you first and foremost. You couldn't put it any better because we've gotten so burned by the superstar that Aaron Rodgers is for so long. After every week he struggled, I go, yeah, he'll be fine. It's Aaron Rodgers. And then, you know, next week I thought he'd come out, throw five touchdowns. So no, you know, he ended up struggling again against the Bears this time. And then he'd do it. And so every week I said, you know what, I wouldn't be worried if I was a Packer fan. It's Aaron Rodgers. He's going to be fine. But, you know, there was something missing this year, and I think it all goes back to missing Jordy Nelson. Who proved to be a bigger deal missing him than even I thought. Because, again, when Jordy went down, I said, don't worry about it. It's Aaron Rodgers. He'll figure it out. He's that good. And, you know, and then you get guys like Eddie Lacy in there, and you're like, oh, my God, he's going to be unstoppable with Eddie Lacy. And that just didn't prove to be the case. Their front seven is pretty solid. Their secondary's got a lot of question marks. Casey Hayward might be gone. They drafted two young kids, Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, who are very raw, really good talent, saw them both to the Senior Bowl last year, but really raw. I mean, even after this year, it still might take them another year or two to really mold into what they're going to be. So those are big question marks. Offensive line was always banged up, although they seem to play good enough every week. It seems like everybody says that offensive line might be a need for them. So Aaron Rodgers, man, I don't know. I still think with Jordy coming back, they're going to be in every game. It's Aaron Rodgers, but I just think that they got more than ever now. They got a lot more question marks than answers. And that has not been the MO or the case that we're used to when it revolving around like Ted Thompson, Mike McCarthy, and Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. So I think that, you know, there's a kink in the armor now that we haven't seen in the Packers for a long time. And I think that's really, really good news and should make a lot of Viking faithfuls, you know, pretty hopeful for what's to come. And again, it's not to say that they're going to just diminish now and disintegrate but or self-destruct. But I just think you're seeing a little kink in the armor, what used to be just an unstoppable, unflappable Aaron Rodgers. And now we're seeing that he's human, you know, like we saw Cam Newton in the Super Bowl. So that's a lot better news than we've had in the last 3, 4, or 5 years regarding the Packers. So that's all you can hope for.
All right, Professor Immon, are you ready to give out some report card grades to the Vikings on their 2015 performances?
Pull up RateMyProfessor.com and let's get in it.
All right. Teddy Bridgewater, what do you got for a grade?
Man, you know what? I honestly, you know, if I'm a, I'm a nice, you would want me as a teacher. I'm going to give him a C plus, but really he should be getting an incomplete because mm-hmm. the offensive line was so bad and so banged up, missing two starters before they even started the season. Not just starters, really good guys in Phil Loadholt and John Sullivan, which didn't make things very easy. Mike Wallace disappeared. He didn't really have a lot of help outside of that at the receiver position besides like a guy like Stephon Diggs. I'm finding out that the guy that Kyle Rudolph, we want him to be, that we saw him in the Pro Bowl, is never going to happen. I just think he's just so slow, and he just can't move. He's so stiff. He just can't separate very well. He should be a good red zone guy, but that's about it. I just think, Teddy, you can fairly assess him now after this year in year three, but you know, really maybe a C plus. Did good enough for what he was given, but he certainly needs to make a huge stride now this year. And again, I think with the offensive line being healthy and then go drafting maybe a stud receiver in the first round, that should help him a lot going forward.
I'm going to go with a B. There was just enough of those throws. He had one where he just dropped it in, I think, to Diggs over defense. And I tweeted, that's a first-round throw.
Yes.
There was just enough of those throws that I saw where I'm just thinking, okay, give him a little more time.
Yeah.
Give him one more weapon. Give him guys who, you know, I get the feeling they need another guy who's a possession guy, an elite possession guy, and I think he could probably work with that if they can't get enough offensive line help. I am a Teddy backer. I'm hashtag Team Teddy, and so to a fault, I'm probably giving him more benefit of the doubt than he deserves. But the one thing that I will admit that he did not do was capitalize on that stretch that he ended the first season with. Where wasn't he one of Pro Football Focus's like top ranked passers over the last four games of his rookie season or something like that?
Yeah, he was. The last four games, he just lit the world on fire. His accuracy percentage was through the roof. Completion percentage was through mm-hmm. the roof. His passer rating was outstanding. Yeah, you're right. He never really carried that momentum with him. And I don't know, you know, that week one, you know, we talked about the Niners. They tried to do a lot of shotgun stuff, and AP couldn't get going. And then it was like, okay, is AP only good in the single back or I form or you know, with the fullback, a power running game? Okay, well, that doesn't really help Teddy because now he's got to go on 5 and 7 step drops, which is tough for this offensive line. So it just seemed like North Turner had a really hard time trying to almost do too much and then trying to make it too simple at times and then afraid to maybe, you know, try some new things and new wrinkles at the end. This is going to be really good, and it's going to be really important now for North Turner this offseason to figure out the identity that's going to make both Adrian Peterson be successful and efficient and also Teddy Bridgewater. And I think that's the biggest storyline for the offense this year, on top of getting some more talent in there, is how they're going to make AP and Teddy gel together and figure out how they can help each other instead of what was kind of a back and forth tug of war with the schematic standpoint this year. So Teddy, I think you're right, though. He made some throws, man, that were like, whoa, this guy's good. This guy's got it. You know, like you can't make those throws and just be an average quarterback. Like, you got something special. But then he'd just make some god-awful throws and mm-hmm. miss some wide-open people.
The left-hand interception.
The lefty interception, the Jerick McKinnon wide-open, streaking down the sideline. Should have been a touchdown against the Packers, which they eventually won, but whatever. You know, it's just you can't do that and be successful consistently in the NFL. So, I mean, there's consistent issues, too, that need to be worked on. And I don't know if that's mechanics. I don't know if that's just getting comfortable. I don't know if that's just he just doesn't have the stud number one receiver. Remember in Louisville, he had Devontae Parker, who I still think was one of the best receivers coming out of that draft, even with Amari Cooper and Kevin White. And I thought it was a mistake that they passed on him because not only was he a premier talent, but he had already played with the kid. The chemistry was mm-hmm. just so obvious coming out that I thought it was just a match made in heaven. But nonetheless, now, you know, they took Waynes. He's going to be really good. But now they have to go back, and now they still have to go get that receiver, which they could have got last year. So we'll see what ends up happening here. But I think Teddy makes some wild throws, and he makes some really head scratch. Year three is going to be huge.
Now, if you've got the AP is the next guy I'm going to ask you about, so you can dive into that after you address my initial point. If you've got a seesaw and AP and Teddy are on it, you have to lean towards Teddy due to age and future role in this offense when you're tailoring an offense that fits both, right?
Well, not only that, but in a passing league, too. I mean, I just don't think you can ride the rock with how good these front sevens are and how good the league is at stacking the box.
Okay, what if Adrian was 26? Then does it change?
Oh, man, that's a great question. And the only reason I say that is because Adrian Peterson at 26 was truly one of a kind. You know, he's
transcendent, basically.
He's going to go down as one of the best ever. And I think when you have a guy like that, you have to make sure you get him the ball 22, 25 times a game. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just – I mean, you're dumb. You're not doing your job. I mean, this guy's so good and so game-changing and majestic and magical that you have to get him the ball. So 26, that's a little different. 30, now 31, I think he's so proven – that you should be able to use him as more of a decoy than anything else off play action and make teams pay you with that aspect because he's so proven at this point. And you can still utilize his talent on the field without actually making him wear down, giving him the ball 25 times. So I think in today's passing age, yes, you got to tailor it to Teddy and find a way to still get the ball to AP.
What's your AP grade?
I'd give AP a solid B+, because AP, you know, 327 carries, started all 16 games, 1,485 yards, won the league rushing title again.
Amazing longevity, to be honest, especially after a year off.
Amazing longevity. I think the big thing is that, you know, he proved all the haters wrong that said, oh, he's going to be rusting as a year older. If anything, it was the opposite. He was fresh. I mean, he came back ready to roll. He sat out the year, and yeah, he's a year older, but man, he was fresh. Didn't have all that wear and tear on him from the year before. I think the biggest thing that we can really close the book on with AP, though, is that we know who he is. He is who he is, and the fact that he's not a great pass catcher. He never will be. He drops some really wide open, easy catches that he should be able to catch, and he fumbles. I don't know what it is, but he still has a really hard time holding on to the football.
And pass protection, too. He's not very good. Is that improved, I guess?
I think it's improved. I think it always was a little overblown.
So, yeah, if AP is not on the wrong side of 30, things are a little different. You have to give Teddy the keys to the offense a little bit more so. And you're going down the road of saying, I mean, AP is basically who he is right now. What do you mean by that?
Well, I just think that, again, you know, after, a good bounce back year, I think a lot of people thought he was going to be rusty or, you know, another year older. He's going to be a step slower. That means I think it was the opposite. I just think that AP came back fresher than ever, used that year to really get his body finely tuned. And he came back and proved that he still is one of the best running backs in the entire league, if not the best. You know, and he can even, I mean, a lot of these running backs on current rosters will get asked that, and more times than not, they all say, who's the best? They say AP. So that is a testament to a 30-year-old running back who's got a lot of wear and tear on him, who still keeps churning out and still looks like he's one of the best, and he's probably got a few years left, too, of really good football left. But, you know, who he is he's a guy who still fumbles the ball quite a bit, 7 fumbles, churning for those extra yards. I think that's just going to always continue to be a problem. He's not an elite pass catcher, always drops some wide open balls here or there. And I think that, you know, to your point, too, that, you know, maybe he's never going to be an elite pass blocker, too. I think that, you know, we look at the guy, we know how strong and how hard he runs. We assume that he's going to be, like a left tackle back there blocking, blowing up some of these linebackers coming in the hole. But he's not, you know, I don't think he's bad in that aspect. I think that whole thing of him being a bad pass blocker was a little overblown, but I just think that he's not as good as some of the other parts of his games, and that just doesn't add up. So AP still got, I think, at least 2-3 year window here where he's going to be really dominant, and then you're probably going to see Father Time catch up to him. But even that, you know, if you were to play dominant until 32, say, that is more than a lot of these guys can say. Especially with a guy like Marshawn Lynch retiring, you see the running back position specifically, so much wear and tear, 327 attempts this year, 30 catches, that's 357 touches. That stuff adds up, and that wears your body down. But AP just proves that he is just one of a kind and one really somebody that we're going to look back and say, that was really a treat and a blessing that we get to watch him for so long.
I think there's a give him a B+. You context adjusted for an A- based on age, based on things around him that he, you know, you could say definitely brought upon himself. But the situation is what the situation is, and you can't change that. Is, you know, there's some people that will make this claim, and I want you to tell me if it's preposterous or not. Is there any way this team is better without Adrian Peterson offensively?
I don't see it. I just think the problem is that they just haven't found a way to gel a Teddy Bridgewater and maybe a passing league that's going to a spread, shotgun, 3, 4, 5 wide receivers, and still managing to make sure Adrian Peterson's on the field, respecting the defense, and is efficient in that role too. Norv Turner, that's going to be his biggest kind of struggle this offseason and question mark and battle or test is finding a way to make both of them efficient on the field and making each other better, making Teddy Bridgewater help Adrian Peterson and vice versa. More importantly, making Adrian Peterson help Teddy Bridgewater in the passing game. That seemed to be a big struggle throughout the year. It seemed like something that Norv really had a hard time dealing with, whether AP was just a power running back kind of guy and you know, had to have Teddy work off some 7-step play action drops. He's going to have to figure that out. That's going to be a big test. And I think also, though, too, is that the guy behind him, Jerick McKinnon, has proved that he has really earned a role in this offense, too. And he should get, I think he had 52 touches on the ground and about 21 catches. He should get about 100 touches, too. So it's going to be tough going for Norv Turner, but he needs to get all those guys involved because they're explosive and they're going to help the offense, you know, continue to mold into what we want them to be. And that's, you know, not just like a game manager offense, but like an offense that eventually one week when the defense doesn't show up, the offense can go out and win them a game.
With the exception of injuries, so you're saying there's a 0% chance somebody else takes the first running back snap next season?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, with the exception of injury, I mean, Adrian Peterson signed that contract coming out of the fiasco, offseason, off-field fiasco the year before. You know, he's got all this money guaranteed the next 2 years. I think you're going to see 2 really good years left in his tank, and then you might see Father Time start to wear him down a little bit. And it's going to be a big decision on his end, too, of what he wants to do with his career, if he wants to retire in purple, if he wants to retire altogether, or if he wants to move on to another team. But we're going to get 2 really good years left at AP, and certainly he should – I think he should continue to be, you know, the focal point of the offense while still being able to utilize just his presence on the field in the passing game as well, which, again, something that Norv Turner really struggled to do this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the odds of him, you know, this is not bound to be a tumultuous offseason for him, unlike last offseason was. Better team means better chance for him to get that ring that I think he craves, because deep down he is obviously a very competitive person. And you do have a team that's positioned to do well with him back on the team. How about the offensive line? It's tough to individually between injuries and just the fact that you can't really single out performance for a lot of guys. What's your grade on this offensive line coming out of 2015?
I mean, I got to give it it's so tough because it's individual guys are easy to give a grade. As a whole, though, they didn't produce. They didn't do very well, no matter how you slice the dice it, injuries, rookies, you name it. I'm going to give them like a D+, because I just think that, you know, again, individually, you can go sit there down the line and say, well, Matt Khalil had a bounce back year. He looks solid for how hard a left tackle position is to play. I think he'll be around for a while. They're going to continue to stick him out.
So does he get like a B, but maybe somebody else gets an F?
Well, you know, it's tough. It's like, you know, you do the group projects at school. It's like, well, I did all of the work. I did my part, but yet my group sucked. So, you know, even though I think I should get a B, my group sucked and my group presentation sucked. So I guess we got a D+.
So who's at the head of the class and who is trailing behind for you if you were to isolate one player on each end?
Yeah, I think that Matt Khalil and Mike Harris were the 2 studs of the group. And Matt Khalil had a big bounce back year. That was a huge, huge question mark going into the season. I think even at training camp, it was obvious that the offensive line was getting destroyed by the Vikings defensive line. But you sat back and you go, I can't tell if the defensive line's just that good or the offensive line's just that bad, or maybe both. And it turned out to be probably both. But you know, again, individually, Matt Khalil, I think he did his part, you know, from a individual standpoint. You got to give him probably at least a B, but his group sucked. So the group presentation probably got about a D+. I think Mike Harris and Matt Khalil did more than what they were asked for, I think, in the big picture, given who they were playing next to. I think the loss of Phil Loadholt, though, and John Sullivan were just too much. I think the unsung hero there was Joe Berger, who did a phenomenal job filling in for John Sullivan. But Brandon Fusco took a huge step back, moving from right guard to left guard. And it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, was right guard just that easy of a position to play? Because a lot of people say that's the easiest of all five offensive line positions. Or is Fusco still struggling with the pec injury, just doesn't look as strong? Or is Fusco not as good as we thought he was? So that's a huge, huge thing going into the offseason. And then the other thing is TJ Clemmings. Like I said, he's got all that experience now, all those snaps, so valuable. Do you want to really put him back on the bench now and wait it out? Or you want to ride that momentum out and maybe you move him inside? Or maybe you think he could compete for the right tackle position with Phil Loadholt? I don't know. But all I know is Phil Loadholt and John Sullivan say they're moving along in their progression and rehabilitation. So far, so good. They're probably going to come back and compete. That's the quote-unquote big theme in this franchise now, is going to come in and compete for a starting job. So we'll see. It's going to be nice having those two guys back. But the biggest thing is, what do you do in the draft? Do you go draft a first rounder and then really boot out TJ Clemmings and all that snaps and experience and say, Loadholt, even though you might be all right, but we're going to give some other kid a shot? I don't know. It's a huge question mark that it's going to be really interesting to see how it all plays out. I think it starts, though, with how healthy and confident they are with Sully and Loadholt.
What are your grades on the defensive line? Obviously, just moving across the trenches.
A solid A.
They were fantastic.
They were fantastic.
I'm not a rube. I'm not a guy who could work for PFF, but yep. I'm kind of in the middle, and it's just like, man, you know, you always had those issues where they couldn't get to the quarterback and the secondary stunk as a big part of it. This just felt like they flipped the script, and man, they could get after the quarterback. They stopped opposing rushing attacks. It was a great unit and a deep unit. There was guys, you know, Tom Johnson doing his part, Daniil Hunter, obviously, maybe even making a guy like Brian Robinson fade into the black a little bit. And it was an incredibly deep unit.
Well, you nailed it. I mean, it wasn't just the starters. It was the whole unit. I mean, a unit as a whole with great depth, guys who can come in different packages, move around, and still have a lot of productivity. And I think, honestly, the guy who I counted out before the season started was Brian Robinson. I thought he had a hell of a season, and he did anything but solidify that he should be gone next year. But it's tough with a guy like Danielle Hunter now, who's going to be, you know, really pushing him for a spot. But I just think all the way around, they complemented each other so well. A true nose tackle, block chewer, like Linval Joseph, makes it so easy for not only the linebackers, but the guys next to him, like B-Rob and Sharif Floyd and Everson Griffin. Love the unit as a whole. Shamar Stephens should be coming back next year. DJ DuBose, they like a little bit as a seventh-round pick. And Scott Kreit, I think he might have one more year to kind of prove that you know, he can be all right. That was a third-round pick. He really has not shown much at all, though, coming from Morgan State. But he was very young and very raw, too. So we'll see what pans out here this last year for him. But that could really solidify a really deep unit. I think, if anything, too, you could really learn from the defensive line when trying to build the offensive line and realize how well these guys complement each other. You get one guy who's really good at one thing, and like a Linval Joseph, chewing up some blocks, strength, power, and then you go get some other guys next to him that complement him really well. And I don't know the blueprint of that on the offensive line, but I know it worked, and I just know that's something that they should try to emulate if you can on the offensive line.
Yeah, I didn't mean to speak ill of Robinson either. It was just more like Hunter was so good.
Oh yeah,
that it made an older player look as though he maybe didn't have that as big of a need for him in the future on the team. So I just felt like it was definitely a coup for the drafting, scouting, and development of him as a player. How about wide receivers? And I think, obviously, with Charles Johnson, you get a, you know, the buzz. Oh, I'm sorry. You know what? I forgot to. I had a point here. Wasn't the narrative, am I remembering correctly, the narrative around Linval Joseph was a little puzzling that they were going after another defensive tackle? Or am I remembering that wrong when they signed him?
You know, I'm having a hard time remembering who was actually in place before Linval Joseph next to Sharif Floyd. So that's tough for me to say, but you know, I thought, you know, it fits what Spielman likes to do in free agency, because he doesn't go sign the big splash players. He doesn't, you know, break the bank and then not be able to re-sign his own guys like the Lions did with like an Ndamukong Suh. He's able to find value guys in the second and third tier that are going to make an impact, or can come in and compete and not be a big cap hit. And I think Linval showed enough in New York that he was still a little bit of an unknown. He was coming off his first contract in year four, and he was not just a block eater, but he could penetrate in the backfield as a pass rusher too. And they got him for all in all a pretty good value deal too. So I don't remember the narrative coming out, to be honest, but you know, now that it's all said and done, you got to love what they got with the kid, and you got to love how he's complimenting everybody else. And in a defense like Zimmer's, having a true nose tackle like this where the game all starts up front is so huge and makes everybody else so much better. You remember the days of Pat Williams and Kevin Williams, the Williams wall. Pat Williams was probably more important piece of that puzzle than people want to admit, because it's just so huge for a guy who can soak up 2-3 blocks. It lets guys like Anthony Barr and Eric Kendricks run around and go make plays.
All right, how about wide receivers? I know I kind of buried that, but I think obviously they expected more out of Charles Johnson, but then Stephon Diggs was a big jump for them. Mike Wallace for me gets an incomplete just because, as a guy who can spread the field, you know, you run those nine routes and your quarterback doesn't have time to actually throw them, makes it difficult to actually, I think, assess him. Now, maybe you might be a little harsher on him with someone who's broken down film, but what's your assessment of that as a group?
Well, you touched on half of it that I want to talk about with Wallace just real quick, is that we know who Wallace is. He's a deep threat guy. He's a big play guy. And I really was really excited about when we brought him in. I really was. I thought he had a lot of gas left in the tank, which he does. The problem is half the part is Teddy didn't have the time to make a 7-step drop and hit him downfield. The other half, though, is we got to come to grips with who Teddy Bridgewater is that, you know, he doesn't have a big arm. And, you know, Derek Carr came out and he had the rifle arm, but Teddy's got the poise. He's accurate on short and intermediate stuff. He's smart for the most part, and he's tough as nails, man. The guy takes some hits and bounces up like a rubber ball, man. He's tough as nails, but he doesn't have a big arm, and that's something that's not a secret or shock. When he came out, people knew he doesn't have a rocket arm. And I think, you know, when you look at Wallace, I don't know if he really matches Teddy's attributes and strengths that well as a downfield passer. I don't know if Teddy can really get it to him. So I think the question becomes then, what do you do with the offense? Do you go to that Tom Brady, spread him out 5 wide, find a little mismatch, find a little Stephon Diggs and Jarius right in the middle of the field and pick defenses apart? Do you go draft a guy like Corey Coleman from Baylor who's sneaky fast and again, can chew you up on underneath routes and intermediate routes? Or do you keep trying? Do you keep trying to go get that downfield guy, a guy who can win jump balls and mismatches like a Josh Doctson and help out Teddy that way? I don't know. I just think Wallace is still really good. He's still really fast. I just don't know if he fits really what Teddy's attributes and strengths are as a downfield passer, which is not much.
But Stephon Diggs obviously gets like an A for expectations.
You got to give Diggs an A, yeah.
Expectations versus production.
No doubt. And I think really it's crazy to think that had Charles Johnson not got hurt, we may have never saw Diggs see the field until maybe at least late in the year. And that's just the way the Vikings like to do things. Is they like to really bring these guys along slowly and don't throw them in the fire until they have to. And I think that with Stephon Diggs, a fifth-round pick from Maryland, he certainly showed the potential his freshman year, lit up the scene of freshman year. Fast, explosive. Keenan McCardell was his wide receiver coach, former Jacksonville great. So
blast from the past right there.
Blast from the past, right? Remember him and Jimmy Smith and Mark Brunell and Fred Taylor lighting it up, right?
Man, they were
those
good.
Are fun. But Keenan McCardell, I think, helped his NFL transition a lot more than people think because he just – He studied under an NFL great, and he really taught him how to play the NFL game and transition smoothly and understand the nuances, and we saw that right out the gate. Great route runner, very explosive, solid hands. It's not your big jump ball, go get it, but he can make some plays when you need him to on quick screens and run after the catch and everything else. So awesome value as a fifth-round pick. I think he'll always be a great number two receiver. I mean, a really, really good number two receiver Who's the number one though? You know, you need a mm-hmm. guy like a Dez Bryant, a Julio, AJ Green, and those are, you know, those are big names. I know. I mean, those don't grow on trees. I know. But you can go get a miniature one right now, and Josh Doctson, who again could just maybe doesn't have the fastest 40 time or get great separation, but it doesn't matter with this kid because you can throw the ball up in double coverage, and his ball skills, his ball tracking skills, and his strong hands are so good. It doesn't matter how many people are on him. Kind of like a Kelvin Benjamin in that aspect. Mm-hmm. And that's what Teddy needs. He needs a guy who can just bail him out like Devontae Parker did in Louisville and just throw the ball up and he's going to get it.
So we talked about first-level defenders. How about second-level guys and beyond? Corners, linebackers, any defensive backs. Who stood out for you and then who lagged behind in terms of value for the Vikings this season?
Well, I think the biggest thing was that Anthony Barr molded into everything that we want him to be, and it's going to get scary how good he can be, because in not only year two of truly playing a traditional 4-3 outside linebacker, kind of played a 3-4 outside linebacker at UCLA, and even before that, he was a running back. So what Mike Zimmer has done in just 2 years, I remember after his rookie year, he made a bunch of splash plays, even was getting flirted around with the defensive rookie of the year before he missed the last four games. But he missed a lot of open field tackles. He struggled in the open field bringing guys down. I did not see that much at all this year in year two. And it just gives you so much excitement and hope for what year three is going to bring. It's scary. And I think we're going to have a more versatile type, Von Miller type of linebacker that not can just rush the passer, but can do it all, drop back and all that. So that's exciting. When you draft somebody 9 overall, you want him to be a splashy playmaker, and that's exactly what Anthony Barr was this year and is going to continue to develop into. Eric Kendricks kind of is who he is. He's going to be a guy who cleans up a lot of tackles, showed pretty good pass rushing skills. I didn't expect that coming out. But good, just a good young core, a duo right there, a good young duo right there you can build off of. And what's kind of becoming a nickel defensive scheme for most teams, because most teams run offenses, run 3 receivers out there. Well, I got to bring in a third cornerback then and drop out a linebacker. So you really only need 2 really good linebackers now. Xavier Rhodes was a little underwhelming, got a little grabby again, got back to his old habits in that aspect. I think just the pressure mounted of playing the number one receiver every single week kind of mentally fatigued him a little bit, and it was never a break for him. But that's what you get when you want to be a number one cornerback. The one guy that I was impressed with, had a nice bounce back season, was Captain Munnerlyn, much like Linval Joseph. Both of those guys really struggled their first year in Minnesota, like a lot of free agents do. People don't get how long it takes for guys to get acclimated, not just to the playbook and the defensive scheme, the guys playing next to them, but everything. I moved my kids to a new school. I got a new house. I'm living in a new place. It's just different. It's foreign. Munnerlyn looked really good in what he thought, you know, what we thought he was supposed to be. And then there's the king in the back end, Harrison Smith, the best safety in the league. I mean, I'll go toe-to-toe with anybody who argues me otherwise. You know, Cam Chancellor's a big hitting guy, but can't cover as well as Smith. You know, some of these other guys can cover but can't hit and tackle like Smith. Smith can do it all. He is a jackknife of all trades, and so it's just a Swiss Army knife when you break it down. He can literally do anything you want, whether it's play center field and pick balls off, or blitz and be kind of the nose for the ball in the kind of the box, a safety. So what they need to do now is get a guy that can do something really well, whether it's a strong safety or free safety. So Harrison can just kind of stick to one or maybe two roles in that aspect, but he needs some help. And I think that's going to be a big, big thing this offseason, getting another safety in there, whether it's a guy they already got like Anton Exum or Anthony Harris, or whether it's drafted somebody.
All right, I got 3 more and then a question, and then we'll wrap it up. How does that sound? Should we roll?
Sounds good, man.
All right, Norv Turner. What's your grade on him?
Oh, Norv. I'm going to give him a C. He was really – he disappointed me this year. I had a lot of high expectations when we first brought him in. I loved the marriage between the two. You got a defensive-minded head coach and a elite offensive-minded offensive coordinator that was a former head coach. Just let him do his thing. You got a rookie quarterback. The offensive line, I think when you read between the lines in any of his press conferences or interviews – you can really hear that he was really limited in what he could do this year with the offensive line. He was so handcuffed. People are asking him, like, are you going to have new, better plays next year? And he's like, I got plays. I got plays we didn't even bust out this year because we couldn't even do the things that we needed to do first to set those plays up. So I think that he's still who we think he can be as far as an offensive wizard, so to speak. And he's got the talent with playmakers around him. I think he needs one more in the passing game, but the offensive line was just so bad that he was just so handcuffed in what he could do. So I'm going to give him a C. I think he tried. I mean, he did everything he could. I think he got a little frustrated near the end of the season, and he saw a little bit of lackluster creativity. But I think, again, that just speaks volumes of how bad the offensive line was and how he just wanted to make sure he put Teddy in a good position more times than not. So I can give him a C. I got a lot of high hopes for him this year, and I think it just goes to show that they need to figure that offensive line one way or another.
How about Rick Spielman?
I think Spielman, he nailed it. I mean, the only thing I would have done different is you know, maybe go get Devontae Parker instead of Waynes. Easy to say now, too, because Waynes didn't play much, and I know how good Devontae Parker is going to be and how much Teddy Bridgewater needs a receiver like that. But you look at all the picks, and he just murders these drafts. People do not understand how good of a draft guy he is and how analytical he can get. You know, he may miss on a Scott Crichton once in a while here or there, or Josh Robinson, but for every one of those, he nails a Stephon Diggs or a Jerick McKinnon. You get a lot of these guys that when you can get production from all of your draft picks, it's insane. I mean, not just your first three picks, but everybody else. And that's without Waynesy doing much. But Eric Kendricks, full-time starter, solid, second in the team of tackles, if not first. It might have been first in the team of tackles. Third-round pick, Danelle Hunter, phenomenal in the pivotal small role he played, only going to get better. Potential and ceiling is through the roof. Fourth-round pick, T.J. Clemmings, started nearly every snap. Was he great? No, but I can't tell you how hard that is for a right tackle to come in and do. Really good talent and ceiling as well. He's only played offensive line a total of 3 years now. And then you get into guys like Stephon Diggs and Michael Pruitt. B.J. DeBose is on the active roster. You got, you know, other guys like Anthony Harris, who played and started a game and looked pretty good for the most part. There is so much to build off of here. You're getting to the point now this year, Brandon, where it's like, I don't know if you can draft another seven guys and expect them to make the team. So do you maybe trade back once, get some ammo, and then trade up and get two really good players and then have, you know, three or four other, you know, kind of depth guys, and maybe one doesn't make the team, maybe two doesn't. But I don't see a ton of room here with some veterans when you mix those guys in as well to really come in and you know, make the roster. So that's how well he's drafted as of late, and that's how exciting that this – you know, I hate to use the word dynasty already before we've even won a playoff game, but I'm just saying the defense is going to be so good and they're so young that they should be really good for a long time if they can figure out that quarterback position.
All right, so the last guy that I got to ask you about, and it's a slam dunk, a layup, however you want to term it, Mike Zimmer.
Whew, man. I'll tell you what. I didn't get, and I've told this to Andy a few times too, I didn't really realize – I've followed football since – really good. I mean, hard, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. I didn't realize until about 2-3 years ago how important coaching was in the NFL, mm-hmm. or just coaching in general. I didn't get it. I thought if you got superstars on your team, you should be really good. If you got a Randy Moss, your offense should be awesome. Coaching is so important, if not the most unsung hero of any team. And I didn't really get it until we went through like the Childress and Leslie Frazier eras, how important it was watching teams like the Patriots and Bill Belichick and all these other teams, same coach, Tom Coughlin, even same coach for so long. And how much it impacts your team. Mike Zimmer, we got one, guys. We have a legitimate franchise coach that every time you ask any player what they think of Zimmer, they say they go to battle with him, they'll go to war with him anytime because he's honest as all hell. He'll leave everything out on the open for you, and he'll tell you like it is, and you got to respect that. And I can't say, like, I'm not a fly in the wall. I don't know what that means. Like, he's honest as all hell. What does that mean? Like, you know, here's what it is. You know, you got this rookie that we're bringing in that's going to fight for your job. He's probably going to have an edge because he's younger. But if you make a splash in training camp, then maybe you make the team. Like, I don't know how honest he is, but I'm just saying, and he's not only producing on the field, he's flipped the worst defense in the league to middle of the pack. And now from middle of the pack to a top seven, top five defense, things should only get better from here. And again, that defense is just going to be so good for so long with all that young talent, barring any crazy injuries, that it, you know, we should be competitive 9-7 to 11-5 almost every year because of that defense. And if anything, if that quarterback position gets solidified, I think we're going to be a playoff team for a long time, which is really fun and something that we haven't been able to say for a long time.
All right, now here's the question I have. This went so well and so long that we're not going to be able to get to the offseason stuff. How about we have you back very quickly in the next few weeks or few days? We'll go over offseason stuff and have an entire separate episode.
Hey, it sounds great to me, man. Yeah, sorry we got a little long-winded.
That's how it goes.
You know, that's how it goes when you got a franchise, when there's a lot of exciting stuff to talk about. Fills up the airtime pretty quick, doesn't it?
And yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. How can people find you on Twitter, and where can they find your work besides Cold Omaha?
Yeah, find me on Twitter at Luke_Spinman, and then edraft.com and coldomaha.com. Got a lot of fun and exciting stuff. Most specifically, the Prospect Today breakdown of prospects, some kind of bigger name prospects. Doing Josh Doctson right now, TCU receiver guy. We've talked a lot about on this show. That should be ready probably by tomorrow morning, I'm hoping, cut up and ready for your viewing pleasure. So it's been a blast, man. Thanks for having me on, and it sounds like I'll be on soon.
Sounds good. Keep following us at Cold Omaha MN. Follow the podcast at Midwest Swing Pod. Find Andy at Andy Carlson Show. Find me at Brandon_Warn. Thank you for joining us for episode 6. And apparently we have a very fun upcoming episode where we can talk Vikings off season with Luke. But for Luke, for Andy, and for me, your host, thanks for joining us on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.